Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's installment of the Friday Filibuster. I am Dave Johnson, joined by Mac McIntyre.
Hack-a-do.
Daryl Loomis.
Hello.
And Eric Asterslager.
I was going to say hello. Daryl took my hello.
Always.
I mean,
you over.
What am I going to... I need a new catchphrase.
Oh, you do need one.
Actually, hello is not even a catchphrase. No. I need a catchphrase. Hi there. Hi
Good.
There. Good. It'd be like Peter Gabriel from... Big time.
Sledgehammer or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Well, we've got a lot on the docket, so let's dive in. Mac, why don't you kick us off and regale us of your week's misadventures?
Well, I guess one of two highlights would have to be Fast and Furious 6.
Yes.
Which you and I went to see.
Yep. But it was a very special showing of Fast and Furious 6.
It was. We saw it on the super high-tech D-Box theater.
Yes.
So this is while you're watching the movie, you're on a special seat that I thought the seat would just like vibrate during the action scenes, but no, it's way beyond that. The seat actually moves around while you're sitting on it. So when the cars are going around a corner, your seat will swerve so it feels like you're going around the corner with them.
When it pulls back and you have like kind of big, bird's eye view establishing shots. What do you think? The seat lifts up slightly. It almost creates this feeling of weightlessness, actually.
It does, yeah. For like aerial shots and crane shots, your seat will move along with the camera. So it was quite a trip. At first, I couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah, right.
The seat was moving around.
But I would say that we were talking about this. If you're going to see a movie in this D-Box thing, I think we saw the perfect movie. I don't think any movie's going to eclipse that, right? Unless
Howard's End or something.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe they re-released Days of Thunder that everyone's been asking for. But,
the movie is just like nonstop action,
nonstop.
And it's almost nonstop like car chase action.
I mean, so. Really outdoes itself. I mean, there's a huge action scene towards the end, and you see clips of it in the trailer, the tank and the throughway and a big car chase. And you think, okay, you know, what are they going to do to beat that? And then the big action scene at the end is, like, redonkulous. But, like, a good kind. I mean, we were just talking about this. I mean, just kudos to the movie for going for it, you know? And, like, so many sequels are just stale and just repeat kind of the formula over and over again. Fast and Furious is just a franchise that went from a Point Break knockoff street racing movie to... I don't know, just a full-on action, Dirty Dozen action movie, extravaganza. And this follows a huge heist movie, you know, in Fast Five. So, I don't know, they definitely mixed it up, and every red cent was on that screen, don't you think, Mac?
It's just crazy over the top. You know, when we were doing our summer preview, I was kind of dissing Pacific Rim because I thought it was going to be nothing but spectacle. But here is Fast and Furious 6. This movie is nothing but spectacle. And yet, I had a great time with it.
Yeah, same here.
It's sort of big, dumb fun.
Yeah, but like, and I know that's overused. And yeah, I mean, the plot isn't, you know, there's like some meathead dialogue. The joke, you know, there's good chemistry. Everyone seems to get along on there, but it's just everyone's likable. I'd say even Michelle Rodriguez, the bane of my existence, was tolerable in this movie, so that's good. The Rock is just roided up in a big way. I don't think I've seen The Rock so inflated as he is now. So just Luke Evans, who's been doing some stuff lately. He's pretty good as a villain, and I don't know, just a real. I mean, combined with the D-Box, it is as much as a legit roller coaster ride, you know, as you can get. I mean, we use that metaphorically, but when you're swooping around in the seat, it's pretty. Literally,
a little less metaphorical.
That's right. It gets away from the metaphorical. So, it was pricey, but I thought it was just like a fun, immersive experience. And
so,
yeah, I had a great time.
Is D-Box also 3D?
No, 3D. And I would say, Mac, we've done 3D, and I mean, I've never been a fan of 3D. Like, I think you'd have, like, the D-Box would probably only work well with certain movies, but I prefer this kind of immersion versus the 3D, I'd say. But
yeah.
That's just me. But maybe it was different too. But
yeah, I don't know if the D-Box would work for a lot of movies.
Yeah,
it's
true.
Kind of, you know, it worked well for this movie because it was, you know, it was like a ride. It was cars.
Yes.
It was, but yeah, for something like, I don't know, I mean, I'm trying to imagine Man of Steel. Sure, there's going to be flying and stuff. Yeah, there better be flying.
Right.
But I don't know if it'd be the same.
I agree. And I think that's why I think we've probably experienced the pinnacle of a D-box in an opera, but it was cool. And the other thing, like, the seats themselves aren't really comfortable.
They're really stiff.
Yeah, if you had to actually sit in a seat, you know, it's not a great, like, you know, I was starting to ache towards the end there, but I mean, I would say that that last action scene, there's a big action scene on a runway with that involves a plane. And that, I mean, I don't know how the gyros didn't just get worn out and blow out the back thing, because that was just constantly moving. But, yeah, so even D-Box aside, I think, you know, I haven't seen Iron Man 3, and even though I like Star Trek Into Darkness, it kind of fell short for me. I would say Fast and Furious might be my, you know, right now it's my favorite summer experience just because it's just crazy. Just so crazy. So crazy.
So you're getting ready to plunk down the $10,000 for your own home.
I was
D-box
looking at
seat.
It, yeah. I think it's $5,000 just to get you started. I'll confess to you right now, I did a quick Craigslist search.
Why not?
Came up empty. I didn't even know. I mean, because Blu-rays are D-box enhanced. You see that?
A lot of them are.
I bet.
I bet you have quite a D-box library just waiting to go.
Probably do. I would have no idea how you possibly set up your own D-box home system.
First, you have to be a D-bag.
Yes. So, yeah. So I'm with Mac. Good times. So, you said you had another highlight, Mac?
Well, I have a feeling one of you guys will bring it up, so I'll turn the floor over to you guys.
All right, Eric, go ahead.
I'll forestall the inevitable for a little bit longer. I finally got around to had a little bit of free time, which is what it takes to get through Lawrence of Arabia. I watched the Blu-ray I picked up cheap a while back because I heard
nice
really good
Blu-ray.
Things about it. It's gorgeous. I hadn't seen that movie in probably 10 years or something. So I remembered it enough to know what was going on, but I was still surprised by things. And that is a great movie.
That's on my shame list.
It really is a great movie.
I'm ashamed. Yeah. I haven't seen it yet. That's on my shame
list. It is a true epic. You know, it starts and it's got an overture. It's got an intermission. I mean, it's a sweeping sweeping epic. And I love that it's I can't imagine a modern movie biopic or whatever. That is as sort of kind of ends on sort of a mixed note. I mean, it doesn't have a sweeping happy ending and all that kind of stuff. It just sort of it lets the character be complicated. I think in a way that would not appeal to modern Oscar bait movies. So it definitely earned all of its awards in 1962, and it is gorgeous. I mean, it's also just like what they had to do to film it. Makes it kind of amazing to watch too. So,
if there's any movie that's really built for Blu-ray on, you know, for home video stuff on Blu-ray, it's that.
Absolutely.
I mean, the desert yeah. stuff is just amazing looking.
It's gorgeous.
I mean,
it's really
a brilliant. Yeah. It's brilliantly filmed and all that stuff. But when I first saw it on, you know, on VHS in pan and scan, you know, it really doesn't.
Right.
It's really a revelation when you finally see it on the. In widescreen, high def, and all of that.
Is that D-Box enhanced?
Oh, man, it would be great.
Sure.
Lots of camel rides.
You know, I honestly, like, now I feel like I know how to ride a camel. No, I don't. No, but I feel like if I had to, I could at least give it the old college try.
At least you have the movements.
You gotta lock your leg. That's how you do it.
All right. Well, I we're all going to tackle the inevitable, so we'll leave that to the end. Daryl, you got anything to add?
Besides, I assume the inevitable is Arrested Development.
Yes, you are correct.
Yes.
So I can go there or just skip it because I've been out of town.
Why don't you kick us off then? Why don't you just do it up? Arrested Development has returned. Like one day in May, all of a sudden Netflix had, what, 15? 15
more. And right, I haven't seen them all yet.
Me neither. I will say right up the front, I think we're on 9.
All right, we're on 7.
Okay.
I've watched through 9, and then I'm currently, as we started recording, watching Maybe's episode because I wanted to see it.
So we'll keep any kind of spoiler discussion to 7 or 6.
Yeah, I mean, but it's very different than what the show was. I think it takes a little while to get going, but at its best, from what I've seen, it's pretty friggin' brilliant.
You know what? I think I agree with everything you just said.
Yep.
I agree with everything you just said. And Eric and I, we've talked about this. I think that's my experience as well. Took a little while to get going. I had to adjust to the difference of it.
The ages. I mean, it shouldn't be such a big thing, but yeah. The age thing is really big.
Well, just or just the simple logistics that.
And how does Will Arnett not look older?
I know. Jason Bateman, I think.
Jason Bateman looks older. Everybody looks older, but not.
Honestly, like the first Lindsay episode, for a few minutes I thought, who's that person that got to play Lindsay in this like, was this a flashback scene or is this like
it
a,
was definitely I think the Botox wears
yeah,
off.
The bastard Botox.
Yeah, it wore off eventually, but once you adjust to what you're watching, and it hasn't all paid off for me yet. So Mac, you might have more insight, more general insight, but I think what they were able to accomplish, the logistics of it. It's pretty impressive when you think
about it. It's really ambitious.
Yes.
Probably the most ambitious straight TV show maybe I've ever seen.
Yeah, when you think about it, like they could have been so lazy with this.
Yes.
They could have just like reset and just kind of done, more Arrested Development, and it could have been, same amount of laughs per episode as we're getting now, and people would have said, "Oh, well, at least we're getting more Arrested Development." And even though it's maybe not as, laugh out loud funny, although I'd argue, you could argue that, and I don't even know if that's important. I think the fact that it is so ambitious, and that they're kind of building this, sprawling, interconnected story, even if it doesn't always 100%, even if it's not perfect, which, how could it be? I think it's pretty amazing. And I guess part of my reaction is that it seemed like, for like a day or two, like, everyone was like, "Oh yay, more Arrested Development on the internet," and then all of a sudden there came this sort of wave of backlash, which kind of caught me by surprise because it seems like, not that this is critic proof because you can certainly nitpick, but it's Arrested Development. It's just, they've never done this before. This is, and they're not they're not being lazy. So I don't know why you would be overly critical.
Well, I think some of that comes from that, and myself included, that a lot of the laughs, a lot of the enduring laughs, come from watching the show multiple times.
Sure.
So the first time that I watched season 3, or when it was airing, I was a little bit skeptical about it, and I mean there were parts that I laughed really well at, but it wasn't the most gut-busting thing I had ever seen. But after watching it, I don't know how many times, 10 or 12 times, and seeing the repetition of the jokes and having all the callbacks and all that stuff, it starts to work on you and becomes what it is. So when you're watching this season 4 thing, it's all new, and you're expecting the same gut-busting laughs, and they're not there. But a lot of those same gut-busting laughs come from repeated viewings. So I'll be curious to see how I feel after I'm done watching it, and then go back and watch it again to see how those first few episodes that didn't make me laugh, that were hard to get into, actually work on its own, on their own terms.
I think that's a good point. What's remarkable about this series 4 versus the other 3 is the formats are so radically different. I mean, through 3 was rapid fire. I mean, just so layered. Like, every square inch of that runtime was packed with something, right? I mean, you're in and out of characters. You're just bouncing around. And there's jokes everywhere. Here, you're with one character mainly, and, the jokes develop. And then they pay off 3 episodes later, 4 episodes later, but I just think it's just fascinating that. And Mac, since you're the only one who's seen all 14, I'll let you jump in here, kind of offer your take.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with everything you guys are saying. I think I love how it's just so ambitious, and it is so just densely plotted with just like layers upon layers of plot that all interconnect with each other. It's just, I don't know how they pulled all this together.
And like the plots are crazy. Like,
yes, well, of course, it's Arrested Development.
It is, right. So, that magic is still there, but they're just, this was it, Sweat and Squeeze? Was that what?
Sweat and Squeeze, yeah.
Michael Bluth, the movie producer. I mean, it's just like Job's incredibly offensive magic trick that Mitch Hurwitz somehow takes the most offensive stuff, but makes you, I should have been super offended by that, but the magic is that you're laughing at Job, right? I mean, the joke's on Job. I don't know. It's just, talk about the fan service. I can't think of anyone that's not on that hasn't made an appearance yet. I don't know. Maybe
including tons of people who were never on it the first time. They're like along for the ride.
I think you're getting bonus cameos.
I've seen weird criticisms of like, oh, there's too many guest stars. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's awesome.
I mean, Seth Rogen and Kristen Wiig as young George.
She's brilliant as young Lucille.
George, young Lucille. I mean, John Krasinski had that brief cameo in Jerry Bruckheimer's office. That is a moment I laughed out loud at. You know, Jerry won't get off the boat for this. I mean,
I don't know if somebody's like that was the episode that really clicked for me.
I agree.
Episode 4 was I think my favorite so far. But
I agree with you. Totally agree. That was Michael-centric, right?
Yeah. That was the B team.
The B team. Oh man, Carl West. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I agree. Like that one, I laughed pretty long and hard at for sure. I mean, so Ron I guess Howard in fact, a starring role, you know.
Yeah. The fact that we are, you know, we've only just watched parts of this season that's brand new, that was a super hype thing, and we're already laughing and making references to things we've only watched once. I think it was a success.
I think this whole situation, like, as I was watching, I will say the one thing that kept recurring to me is this is surreal. I can't believe I'm watching Arrested Development, you know,
six years
after. Just like, I keep going to logistics, but just to get all these people who are now legit big stars, you know, and to pull them together, and even though you've got to tweak your format so everyone gets in it, just to make something coherent and quality. It's just kind of dumbfounding how they were able to pull it off, you know? And blah, blah, blah. He's in this. Blah, blah, blah's in this. Yes. So,
yes, he is. He had a great tongue twister that I can't remember.
I can't remember.
Oh, so good.
But it was great.
Blah, 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 bomb.
After watching the whole thing, you know, I couldn't sleep that night because my mind was just buzzing over everything that I'd seen. And it's like I want to start at the beginning and watch it again to see how everything ties together.
That's right.
And catch all the little things I missed the first time.
I mean, I know.
I'm just itching to start watching it again.
I'll see scenes all of a sudden. Maybe he's running somewhere in the background or George Michael appears briefly, you know, and then Tobias gets hit by the bus in India. Right. I mean, it's just crazy. So complex, so layered for sure. And you know, the other thing, Eric and I were talking about is like, regardless, even if maybe the laughs aren't as rapid fire, is there anything on TV now that even approaches the brilliance of this? You know, I don't know.
I don't think so.
I mean, is Big Bang Theory in the same league as this?
No way.
God.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's a rhetorical question. But you know,
even the shows that we have held up over the past few years as being, you know, the latest great shows were disappointing this past season.
Yeah,
so.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
No, it's definitely the best comedy that's been on TV in 2013.
I would agree with that. It's just I predict we'll be revisiting some of the stuff, you know, in the coming weeks. So, listeners, be prepared for that. But I still can't get over that giant Pirates of the Caribbean ship in Jerry Bruckheimer's office.
I'm a big fan of Swapigans.
Swapigans is an awesome concept.
That was great. I love that.
And I have to say, I cannot pay a show a bigger compliment than saying that Ron Howard delivered a Willow joke in this show.
Yes.
I can't recall it. Didn't he say like I got Willow from a you got Willow from like a laundry ad or something like that?
Because apparently he gets all his movies ideas out of photographs.
Yes, that's right. Or ads or something. And it was an ad for like Fluffy Soft. Yeah. I can't remember what it was. It's like Ron Howard, the man himself, delivered a Willow joke. Do you need you say any more?
All kudos to Mitch Hurwitz and team. They've done a hell of a job.
Yeah. So all right. Well, I'm sure we'll be at a point soon where we can talk freely and openly, having watched all episodes. But you know, just again, having 15 episodes staring at you right out of the gates, that's pretty awesome too. You know, you're not waiting weeks. You're just like, here's 15, go crazy, watch what you can, or space them out, whatever you want. I like that trend. So, all right. Well, let's go quickly around the horn, stuff that's coming out on Verdict that we have. Mac, go ahead.
Let's see. I finished it. Did I talk about this last week? I finished up a Doctor Who review, The Visitation.
Mm-hmm.
This one's from 1982, I think. It's the fifth Doctor.
Afro travels... Doctor?
What's that?
Afro Doctor?
No, that would be the fourth Doctor.
Okay,
this is the
okay,
young
okay.
blonde guy Doctor.
Oh, okay.
With the celery on his jacket.
Gotcha.
And he travels back in time to 1666 in England, where it's the plague, and there's an alien running around plague-ridden London, England, causing trouble. So the Doctor has to deal with evil aliens and has to avoid getting bit by plague rats. So. Mm. Good times.
All right. Nice. Daryl.
My big thing, well, it's really last week, but is the Ultimate Gangster Collection Contemporary, which is five movies. They're all repackages, unfortunately, of previous releases, but it's Mean Streets, The Untouchables, Goodfellas, Heat, and The Departed. And what was interesting to me about it is that most of these movies I don't really like. I like Mean Streets. I'd never seen The Departed. The middle three movies I don't really care for. But it was interesting to go back and watch them again. It was unfortunate that they're all repackagings. But I was hoping that some of my preconceived notions about the movies would change. They didn't. I feel exactly the same way about them. Although I was interested in The Departed mostly because it's a remake of Infernal Affairs.
Yeah, and what did you think? What did you think of that?
As a remake of Infernal Affairs, it's fine.
Compared to Infernal Affairs.
Infernal Affairs is way better.
Yes, it is. Correct. That is a correct answer.
Yes,
I love that dearly. Well,
Infernal Affairs is awesome.
It's awesome.
And this is kind of, you know, it's a lot of stunt casting in The Departed, and that's all fine. It becomes pretty clear, though, that when Robert De Niro's in four of the five movies in this set, that gangster films have sort of halted in their scope. You can't find another guy.
No.
I love Robert De Niro as far as he goes, but you can't find another guy. He's got to be in, you know, if you're going to take five classic contemporary gangster movies, and they've all got De Niro as a main component. It just doesn't. It feels cheap to me ultimately.
All right, Eric.
I'm reviewing a British miniseries called Falcone, which is based on a series of crime novels. So the main character's name is Falcone. This is they take place in Spain. He's a detective. He's, you know, troubled and moody and stuff. But I've watched the first of these two, essentially like hour and a half movie episodes, each based on one of the books in the series. And it's pretty good. You know, I think, you know, the UK certainly has the market cornered on, compelling, character-driven crime
yes.
miniseries. I think this fits in pretty well. I think I've seen others that are more enjoyable, more charming, more, of more memorable characters, but this has a kind of a neat psychological aspect to it, and goes pretty dark in the first movie. So, gotta see if the second one holds up. But it's, you know, I think, you know, if you're into that kind of thing and you've burned through everything else, then this is definitely waiting for you. So
nice. Got a little movie called Ninja 3, The Domination. Showed some of it to Mac. Mac, your thoughts?
Yeah, it was dominating.
It was dominating. It was really skyrocketed right to the top of, you know, right near the top of my list of inadvertently hilarious 80s action movies. Not sure where to begin. I'm actually working on my review now. I think the way I'm going to approach the review is describe the entire film in detail and leave it at that and just let people decide if that interests them or not.
Now, is this the one that's being put out by Scream Factory? Or is that a different ninja movie?
See, it is Scream Factory, yes.
Okay,
correct.
I've seen this. I've seen this movie.
You have?
Yes, yes.
Oh, good. It is more a horror movie than anything because it is a aerobic instructor / telephone pole worker, and she is possessed by an evil ninja. But that's not the great parts of it. The great parts are multi and varied, like her boyfriend, an oblivious moron cop who is the hairiest man that ever lived. the guy's back is, defies logic as much hair he has. And one of the great love scenes of our generation where she, in some supreme product placement, takes a can of V8 juice, pours it down her neck, and her lover licks the V8 off of her. Yeah, so it's a joy, and it is a joy to share with the world. So expect that sometime pretty soon. Okay, Mac, what's next?
Okay, let's take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. You at home can follow along. We're going to DVDverdict.com. We're going to hit the tab for the upcoming DVD releases. There we'll scroll down and click the link for June 4th, the cover art gallery, June 4th, that is. And we'll just talk about what we see on the list here.
There are a whole bunch of dual sets this week.
Some are odd, like Repo Men and Children of Men, just because they have men in the
film. Yeah.
Well, they're both sci-fi. I guess.
Okay, there it is. There's a connection.
Dante's Peak and Daylight both begin with D.
That's correct.
Uncle Buck and Fletch. I don't know.
Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I get. No, John Candy was never on Saturday Night Live.
No, he was on SCTV.
Now, I will say, probably the greatest double feature ever released, Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz.
Yeah,
that's the best.
Yeah, that might be the best ever, so I will give it that much.
Leap Year and Love Happens is a combo that I would rather kill myself.
There is pain. I reviewed Leap Year, and that movie is terrible. Yay.
No, I would never.
I usually don't get the rom-coms. I got that thinking the wife and I would have a good time with it. It is so bad.
Amy Adams is movie kryptonite for me.
Oof, we'll see. We'll see if she's literally movie kryptonite.
Good choice of words.
I know.
Oh, yeah, apparently, yeah.
We'll see what happens.
We've got A Good Day to Die Hard, a.k.a. Die Hard 5.
That's right, yep.
Which I don't think was as bad as everyone said it was.
Yeah, I'm with you. Mac and I saw that one, too. And, I'm the same here. Of course,
it's not as good as the original Die Hard, because no movie could be that good. But for what it is, this fifth movie was entertaining.
Yep. And at least it carried an R rating, so you give it that much.
And there is an extended edition on your list here, too.
So. Oh, look at that. Yeah, there's the extended cut.
With the first half of the last season of Breaking Bad.
We should
be finishing up.
Yes.
Well, boy, a couple months.
Yeah, I haven't seen the fifth season.
Of Breaking Bad?
What's that?
Is it the last season of Breaking Bad?
Yeah. Well, they split the fifth season in half. Unless they're going to call this new season the sixth season, but...
But is it final season, I guess?
Yes, final season.
Okay. But I still never watched, and I will soon.
Oh, Breaking Bad? I watched the first four seasons are on Netflix, and man, it's so good.
Yes, it is.
So, I'm looking forward to seeing this fifth one, seeing where it goes.
Let's see, we got Forgetting Sarah Marshall, which I love.
I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I was pleasantly surprised by that.
Despite the presence of Russell Brand.
Well, I think Russell Brand's really funny in it. I mean, he does what he does, and it works for the three or four scenes that he's in. I don't want to see him on a talk show.
But Daryl, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Did anybody get around to seeing Warm Bodies when it was in theaters? This is kind of a big surprise hit back in January. Now it's coming out.
No, I never
The zombie love story?
Yeah.
No, I didn't see it.
Did not.
Okay, well, it was a big surprise hit when it came out, so there it is.
All right, well, is that a re-release of Scott Pilgrim?
Looks like it. I know later in the summer they're coming out with pretty sharp-looking steel case versions of all of those movies, the Edgar Wright movies.
Is it just they're just encased in steel, or does it get anything else?
It's got nice new cover art.
Okay. And all I know is I want a steel case version of steel.
Maybe.
Shaq steel.
Shaq steel.
Yes. Someday.
But it would have to be steel that looks like rubbery plastic.
Yes,
like in
that'd be the trick. That'd be the trick.
Now, Dave, if they came out with a steel case version of steel, would you steal it?
I would have to steel myself, though, to do it.
You're a law-abiding type, but the irony, I think.
It would take steely results, for sure. So, okay, inadvertently released on a DVD release of the week. Mac.
Fluid technique.
Oh, wait a minute. We used that one already, didn't we?
Oh, you did? Oh, no. Crap. Okay, now I got to think of another. Wild Madagascar.
Okay, that works. Daryl?
Well, fluid technique was mine as well, so I've been screwed both ways. Let's see. We're going to go with, to represent my life, it's a disaster.
All right. Eric?
Go with A Good Day to Die Hard.
Too bad. I'm going to go with, I'm going to cheat a little bit, say Mountain Men, but M-O-U-N-T-I-N apostrophe.
That's good.
That's fine. Okay. Ambush topics. You know how this works. We'll kick it off. We have little storms up here, so badass storms.
It was a TV series, and the UK series Misfits opens up with a big hail lightning storm that gives everyone superpowers.
Let's see. I guess in, I believe it was X-Men 2, when the X-Men are flying around in their jet, and the character Storm decides they need a distraction.
That's true.
And so she pulls down not just one tornado out of the sky, but several all at once, and they go flying the jet through them.
Yes.
Overkill, perhaps? Do you think you only need one tornado, or do you need, like, dozens?
She brought the – I wonder how many civilians lost their lives in that thing.
Well, they were humans, not mutants.
Ah, yeah, that's
All right, so the whole storm thing brings back an old issue of a movie I can't remember, and I wish I could, of a tornado blowing in a window, glass going in somebody's face. And I can never remember what that movie is, and I've never been able to decipher it. So in lieu of that, I'm going to go with the escape scene in The Shawshank Redemption when Tim Robbins comes out in the big rainstorm.
Ah, spoiler, I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
He's redeemed. Sorry.
That's the clip that He's everyone redeemed. Shows whenever they talk
That's
about
That's true, the- yes. I gotcha. Okay. You know, I had my storm in mind, and now I... Okay, I'm going to go... Yes, I remember. It's the... I'm going to go with the monsoon in Karate Kid Part 2. Yes, it's a pivotal scene in that film, because that is where Sato gained a respect for Daniel-san. And then... Unfortunately, what was his son's name? I can't remember. But he runs off pissed because he has no honor. But hey, when you got Sato with you, what more do you need? That's what I say. So I wish I'd named my son Sato. No,
do you, Dave?
I do. Maybe.
Well, I mean, you were born in Japan.
I was.
So you have that.
I think my legacy on. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Mac, what do you have?
All right, next topic, surgery.
Mm. Ooh, I know what yours is going to be, too, Mac.
Oh, Jay Hogan, no spoilers.
I know what yours is. Okay, surgery.
All right, I'm going to go with one of my favorite horror movies of all time, Eyes Without a Face, a doctor is trying to solve his daughter's face problem that he caused by surgically removing other college girls' faces. And it features, for 1963, a really graphic surgery scene and face removal that is really to be lauded for 1963. It's damned gross.
Nice.
That's a really good movie.
It's a good movie, yeah.
I'll keep the Arrested Development going and go Dr. Stein, right? He did so many... Fantastic surgery. He shortened Michael's calf muscles. So that
that's right.
He switched the index finger and the middle finger for the first time.
Right. Best surgeon in Orange County.
That's right. He left the snippers in, even though...
He didn't, though.
He did, even, but it was less likely that the nurse walked away with him, so... Yeah.
Let's get in there and do it Dr. Stein style.
I'm gonna go the aftermath of the surgery in Lincoln. There's a scene in Lincoln where Lincoln's son is kind of wandering around outside a sort of a makeshift Civil War hospital, and these guys walk by with a wheelbarrow that eventually is revealed to be full of legs that have been cut off,
fun.
And they get dumped into a big pit of legs.
That's tough.
That is tough. Yeah. And those guys just went in with head colds. So it was tough.
It was tough.
All right. Well, for mine, I came across this – in writing about movies for my blog, I came across this real oddity of a movie from 1934. It's called Life Returns. And how this works was back in the 30s, these veterinarians did this experiment on this dog. The dog had been euthanized. They performed surgery on it and got it breathing again. And this was recorded. Now, some filmmakers got a hold of this footage and used it as the big finale for their movie. So it's this heartwarming tale about a scientist and his son, and they get separated, and then the son's dog gets hit by a car, and then there's a tearful reunion at the hospital. And then the scientist says, you know, look, son, those doctors are going to save your dog. And then we cut from there to actual dog surgery that ends the movie.
Yikes. This from 34, you say?
Yes.
Yikes.
And it's so just creepy and disturbing, these guys operating on this dog. And so,
Do you know the impetus of the dog footage, like what they were hoping to garner from it?
It was hang on, I got the thing right here. It was performed by Dr. Robert E. Cornish on May 22nd, 1934 in Berkeley, California, in which they did, in fact, get a euthanized dog to start breathing again. But the poor dog has one tube in its mouth and the other tube, like, stuck into its lungs. But, yeah, it's breathing again.
That's the important thing.
Yikes. It's probably something.
And the disclaimer at the beginning of the movie says, you know, actual footage of life after death.
Do you know what the original fate of the dog was?
I don't know. I don't know.
Hit by a car, probably.
Yeah, hit by a car again.
And that dog became Rin Tin Tin.
I think he went on to have a very successful basketball career.
Oh, man.
Response several sequels.
Okay, Daryl, go ahead.
All right, hippies.
Nice. Lindsay's boyfriend cannot be counted in this for episode 4.
No, but maybe her old boyfriend could be counted.
Johnny Bark?
Johnny Bark. I also really, on a different subject, I like the name play of Marky Bark.
Yeah, Marky Bark.
Makes me laugh.
He's got facial blindness, correct? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's see here. Hippies.
Has the statute fallen on me not using Star Trek in...
I want to hear a hippie from Star Trek. I want to hear it.
The classic episode, The Way to Eden, is the one where the Enterprise encountered the space hippies.
Yes.
And they were all like having like a sit-in or a love-in or a be-in or whatever in the transporter room. And so Spock went and joined them, and he brought out the Vulcan harp, and they had a jam session with them playing their space hippie instruments and Spock playing the Vulcan harp.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty much perfect.
So, yeah, the new J.J. Abrams movie didn't have any space hippies in it.
It's coming.
No, they've fallen out of fashion, I suppose.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah. Well, they haven't really updated their look in 40 years, so it's kind of their fault.
Well, the only ones that spring to mind, it's not very colorful, but the series finale of Freaks and Geeks, where Lindsay falls in with the Grateful Dead hippies.
Right?
Yeah,
that's good.
Became a deadhead and jumped into a... I think it was a Vanagon, right? I think it was a legit Vanagon. They went cross-country. Is that how? But, yeah.
And then she went and slept with Don Draper.
That's right.
Everything was dead.
Everything died, yes.
Spoilers. Oh, well, that's okay. I assume everyone slept with Don Draper at some point.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not really a spoiler. She's a woman, and she's in 1968, so...
That's true. I'm going to go with... Dude, there must have been hippies in Dazed and Confused. Yeah, there were, of course, there were stoner types. Oh, yeah, I guess they count as hippies.
Mila Jovovich, I would say, jumps to mind with her character, right?
Right. That's a great movie.
That is a great... If you think about it, though, it's been 30 years since it was released, right? Something like that?
20 years.
20 years, thank you. 30
still,
years.
Still.
20 years is a long-ass time, too.
Yeah.
All right. All right. So yours. Yes, go for it.
All right, so mine is an old movie from 85 called Stryker's War that is better titled Thou Shalt Not Kill, Except. Nice. About a group of returning Vietnam veterans that get accosted by a group of a sort of Charles Manson-y kind of hippie group, cult group, led by Sam Raimi as the leader. And they are the most diabolical and genuinely gross hippies you'll ever see.
Nice. How are they diabolical exactly? Aren't they just preaching peace and love?
Well, it depends on how you want to define hippie.
Oh, okay.
How about a shout out to Spinal Tap's The Flower People, right?
That's good. That's great.
Yeah, sure, sure.
We love you.
We love you. That's great. Okay, Eric, take us away.
All right, Bullies.
And we got some, like, diehard villains don't count, you know what I mean? Can't really count Hans Gruber as a bully, I think.
I don't recall him pantsing John
McClane. That is correct. How about Donkey Lips from Salute Your Shorts?
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, he was a bully. Donkey Lips.
Salute Your Shorts.
Let's see. You guys remember Parker Lewis Can't Lose?
Of course, yes.
Yeah, and remember Kubiak was the bully?
Yeah, he went on to get a job in ER, in the ER.
ER, yes. Yeah. Yeah. He did a lot of acting in TV in the 90s, but yeah. Of course, his dialogue on Parker Lewis was just limited to, eat now.
Yes.
He always wanted to eat.
That's right.
All right, well, I'm going to go with, I don't remember his name, but the kid in the coonskin cap from the Christmas Story.
Oh, yeah.
Farkas, right?
Farkas. Scott Farkas.
Farkas. Yeah, yeah. Farkas.
In Yellow Eyes.
I almost thought you were talking about the one and only Bugs Meany, but no.
Oh, man. Bugs Meany. It's good thing that wasn't mine, Dave.
That's true.
Bugs Meany hiding his wooden nickels under the sauerkraut on his hot dog.
He's the worst.
Because you knew he hit it there because he put the mustard on top of the sauerkraut. And no one who really eats hot dogs would put the mustard on top of the sauerkraut.
Obviously, yes.
That's obvious to everybody. Oh, Bugs. I guess it's me. I finally got around to seeing Paranorman, which is a really great movie. And it's got a lot to say about bullying, bullies and bullying. And there's a... You know, there's a nice relationship between the bully and the bullied as the movie goes on. It's on Netflix, and it's worth checking out.
And I think that is it. I think that wraps up the Friday Filibuster. So here's your tease for the next 12 episodes, Arrested Development Season 4. So,
yeah, 15 hours of once we finally decide that.
Yeah.
Oh, man, remember when he did that?
That's right. These are like 35-minute episodes and not 22-minute episodes. Either,
right. So. A lot more references
to work off. So, yeah, so that is it. Thanks for tuning in. Friday Filibuster at DVDverdict.com. Mac, take us away.
You're out of the movie.